Hey everybody, it's the Commodore from the Clan of the Grey Wolf, and you are watching the Weekly Ringer series here on clanofthegreywolf.com. Been a little while since our last meeting. That is all my fault, and of course none yours. However, there's been a lot going on, been a lot of things happening here in Commodore land that I think would provide full explanation. But instead of really figuring those things out, let us continue to drive on toward the 100th episode, which is fastly approaching. We're going to have to take a good long look at how that 100th episode is going to come to play in the very near future. However, the other thing we're going to need to do is talk about today first. So what are we going to do? We're going to talk about the question I gave you last time, which was about controllers. I've got several of examples here just to kind of talk through them a little bit. I asked you guys about controllers last week. We're going to tie that thing up, put a little bow around it, and we're going to talk about your favorite controllers in the past. And, I'm always going to do as I do in every video. I'm going to give you my opinion as well, tell you a little bit about how I think about this particular question. And then I'm going to ask you guys a question for next week, which I think is an absolute zinger. It's one I think that you're going to have to spend some time thinking about. One I have had on the list for a while, and I think, is really good. It's one of those questions that I think philosophically we have to ask ourselves about the mechanisms, what they call the apparatus. That's what film people call it. The apparatus of video gaming. I want you to think about that for next time. I'm going to give you a question about that one that I think will twist your noodle a little bit there. All right, so as I always do, I begin the episodes with starting off welcoming those of you that have provided a comment for the first time, so are new to the comments portion of the program. Remember, comments are how the show continues to run. If nobody had commented on the first Weekly Ringer, there wouldn't be this many of them at this point. There probably wouldn't have been two of them. The point is, you guys keep the show running. That is why we have the show. That's why the show continues to go. That's why I'm here right now talking to you. So if you comment, thank you very much. If you don't comment, you just like to watch the show, that's completely fine too. We definitely have a lot of fans out there that are silent viewers. I prefer to call them silent viewers rather than lurkers, because lurkers just has a negative connotation to it right off the bat, and I don't like that idea. Anyway, the point is, the new person we only have one person to welcome this week, but that's okay. You know, it ebbs and flows, folks. We have one new person to welcome this week, and that is Smelly586. Now, I guess Smelly586 would probably be better, or at least slightly better, than Stanky486, or, you know, potentially, I don't know, Smelly286. I don't know. Maybe, who knows? But Smelly586, welcome to you. 586 probably is not even represented or meant to in any way align with an x86 architecture. I probably just dreamt that up. Maybe it's a birthday. I don't know. I don't care. Welcome to you, Smelly586. Thank you for being a part of the Weekly Ringer. Now that that's over, folks, let's get to the conversation. I don't know why that took so long or why that filled my mouth with so many words, but I apologize in advance for what will be probably the rest of this video. In any case, last time, I asked you guys about controllers. With the announcements surrounding the Xbox One, or the X-Bone, depending on what you like to call it, with the PS4 on its way as well, with full controller views for those systems having been processed, obviously, with the Wii U being out already, so we have this idea of what the next generation hardware is going to look like. What that has meant is we've seen the new controllers, we've seen some of the control mechanisms, including Kinect, things like that, for these systems and consoles as well. However, it really started to beg a question in my mind, because everything seems kind of loosely still based in the same idea. Even the PS4 controller seems kind of influenced, as it were, by, in my opinion, the Xbox 360 controller, which I think many people in the gaming industry have already kind of posited is the greatest video game controller of all time. So I threw that question back to you guys. Is it, in fact, the best video game controller of all time? lots of great answers to work with. I'll start with some of the things that you guys came up with very early on, which is, or that kind of ran through, I shouldn't say it, early on, but then ran through the whole argument the whole way through. First is that I think most of us, if not all of us, would consider either the Super Nintendo controller, the SNES controller, or the 360 controller to be the best of all time. Many of you out there also put down there the PlayStation, DualShock, whatever you want to call it, that is also in the running. I would consider that to be in contention as well. In any case, I would say any one of those three, I think, is probably up there, because there's certainly a lot more of them than there were of anything else, I think. But also, they are just plain, flat out more comfortable. We'll talk about that in a little bit. Several of you put that in your notes and in your thoughts this week, of which there were many. But I think most of us probably, when I look through the comments and when I look around kind of what people's favorite controllers are, those three, the 360, the SNES, or the DualShock for all of the PlayStation, the various and sundry PlayStations there have been since 1995, pretty much the same. Those seem to be everyone's favorites of all time. Now, there are certainly different things that come along the way. We'll talk about some of those as well. But I think what is undeniable, I think, the next thing I was going to say is that the Super Nintendo controller is probably the most influential video game controller of all time. I think that's something that came throughout the conversation as well. I could not agree more about that. I think it definitely is. And if my question was most influential, I think you guys just answered it. Also, several of you put the idea that Sony sticking to its guns over the years, really having pretty much the same controller design, is a good thing. It's not a bad thing. It really kind of, it isn't, you know, necessarily the lack of embracing of change. It's more that they found something that works really well, and they stick with it because it works. Can't argue with success. They've certainly sold a crap load of those guys, and I think they will sell a lot more. Even though the new DualShock controller, the new Sony controllers, they actually, I think, are a lot more akin to an Xbox 360 controller, which is why I think they'll be better moving forward. But I'm introducing my bias and talking about what I think is the answer to the question. So I will instead go down that road. I will talk about your contributions. So let's see. Red Mage got us kicked off in that really saying a couple things. One is that the SNES is probably the best blueprint for a controller that anybody has ever seen. The 360 really kind of executes on the vision of the Super Nintendo. And so here we go, right? Everybody knows this guy right here, the Super Nintendo and the Super NES controller, right? Is probably the blueprint for every controller that comes after it. I think there's good reason for this. Remember, Nintendo's coming from the NES, which had small... I actually do have an NES controller. I didn't bring every controller I have in here. I just decided to cut it down to my favorites. The NES controller, remember, is completely square. It gets kind of uncomfortable. As a matter of fact, I remember back when I was playing a lot of Nintendo, people were saying that you could get Nintenditis, right? Playing the game and being repetitive and just mashing buttons, and all of a sudden you'd start to feel lots of pain in your wrists and carpal tunnel and all this kind of stuff. It was small. First of all, it was kind of made for kids. Second of all, it really only had two buttons. Two buttons as in right here, and then of course it had a start and select button, and that was that, and a D-pad, which is almost exactly the same as the D-pad on the Super NES, except this one tends to be more rounded off. I have maybe more sensitive hands. I don't play guitar or anything, so I don't have calluses on my fingers, but I remember playing the NES controller and getting kind of it would like cut in. I'd get a little an NES mark on my thumb, and you could actually start like cutting yourself if you were holding it down. The SNES was so much better than that. It was rounded off, and so you could get an imprint on your thumb for popping onto the old, I don't know if you can see that, popping on the old SNES, but it always went away, and it was so much more smooth. And there was kind of like a little membrane underneath the D-pad on the SNES controller, and I found that to be the most satisfying part of it. you never felt like you were ever gonna. It felt so well made. That's the best part of the Super Nintendo controller, as I can see. It's so well made. You never feel like you're gonna break the thing in half. I mean, you could just sit there and crank on this thing, and it's not gonna go anywhere. The addition of the shoulder buttons is also hugely influential, and I think a lot of fun and a cool thing for video games. Even though they weren't hugely used on the SNES, you could tell that they were probably the least utilized buttons. In many cases, they actually performed redundant functions of what you could do with the core buttons. But, you know, the idea was planted. You know, instead of holding the controller kind of like this, you could actually just put your fingers right on top and, you know, they're right there. No problem. Folks, the reason that I think Red Mage talks about this as the blueprint is because you see it working perfectly, right? It's smaller, but it gets the job done. It's cheaply and easily made, yet it feels nice and compact and easy to, and very difficult to break, right? It's not going anywhere. The buttons aren't just kind of chunky and weird. They're smooth, they're round, and they work. You could probably dunk this thing in a whole vat of water, pull it right back up, and the thing would work perfectly. And you could throw it against the wall, and as I did many, many times, and the thing just takes a licking and keeps on ticking. So, I think the SNES controller right off the bat is the blueprint. I agree with Red Mage 100%. You know, Red Mage also talked a little bit about the Xbox 360 controller kind of carrying on that legacy and some of the things that it does well. And I agree with that. But I'm going to leave that for a couple future comments as well. Mr. K brought up a really cool point that I thought was completely legitimate, as he is one to do in the community in the past. The simple idea from Mr. K is really this, that there really isn't a best controller in video gaming because that really is kind of a meaningless concept. For example, a controller for, say, you know, a Castlevania type game is probably going to look a little bit different than the best controller for maybe a sports game or a driving game, right? Where other kinds of control are really needed in order to best control the game at hand. Also, Mr. K points out, you know, it's also about anatomy, right? If you have smaller hands, then you're probably going to prefer a DualShock controller over, you know, a larger controller. In fact, I have a comment about that in a little bit. The point is, there's no such thing necessarily as a best controller of all time because of the fact that it's just out there. That there are so many kinds of controllers and so many kinds of games and so many kinds of people that really best is a difficult thing to categorize in any stretch of the imagination. And I agree with that. But that's, folks, you know, it's the same reason why when you watch sports talk radio while people ask, you know, who's the best quarterback of all time, people get red in the face and scream about what their favorite is. It's the same thing, right? We're here to argue about it. We're here to talk about it and discuss it. That's why I have a show. That's in many ways why we have a website. That's what it's all about. So let's talk about it. Let's see. Smoke Pants gave, I think, the best breakdown analysis of the week. Really broke down the 360 controller but in many different ways. But I think one of the key contributions there for Smoke Pants is that and I agree with this, that for his money, the analog controllers on the 360 controller, which you can see right here, are the best. It is the best implementation on a controller that I have found. I think this is universally still true. I think the analog sticks, even on the 360, are better than the PS3 ones. Obviously, I'd like to see how they're going to get implemented on the PS4 and on the Xbone as well. But I thought it was a great breakdown of the Xbox 360 controller, which I'm going to talk about right now as well. Yes, I think the implementation of the analog sticks is the best on the 360 controller. This was the first controller for my money to not completely dish the D-pad NES world that we lived in before. It was the first one that said maybe we shouldn't, you know, use that as the standard. You could make an argument for that being the N64, because of the fact that, and I actually do have a 64 controller, I just didn't bring it with me, but you know, the 64 controller, you grabbed in the middle if you wanted to use the analog stick, and then you grabbed in the side if you wanted to use the D-pad. Now, you know, in all reality, what that ended up doing was kind of making most of the controller useless most of the time, because you'd be using an either-or mentality. And I think in many cases, that's probably exactly where we don't want to be from a perspective of, you know, a controller. You don't want to have a controller that you just never, you never use part of it. It just doesn't make much sense, and it takes up unwanted real estate, and we all know how those freaking N64 controllers stored. They didn't store well at all whatsoever. But I think the reason why I say that, the 360 controller takes the D-pad and really throws it down over here where the DualShock puts the analog stick, and then just throws the analog stick right up here. Simple and easy, right? Makes total sense. Same thing happened on the original Xbox controllers. I always call it the Xbox One. What the hell do you call it now? Anyway, the original Xbox had the same thing going on. Now, I don't think the original Xbox is going to get nominated for any of the best controller awards, most probably because of the Duke. And I didn't bring my Duke with me. I have it in the other room, but I could show you the Duke. The Duke would take up the entire screen. You'd never see anything. But anyway, so the Duke had the same thing going, but it was so huge. It was clunky, and it was difficult to control. I found it to be really, really tough. And I have pretty big hands. So you know what they say about gamers with big hands, right? That they play with big controllers. The point is, this is, I think, as Smokepan said, the best implementation of the analog stick. Clearly exactly the same as the Super Nintendo design here. We've got the bumpers, which is clearly the same as the Super Nintendo, with the triggers, which I think tend to be actually probably one of my favorite parts of the Xbox 360 controller. I think it does triggers better than anybody else does. The triggers are real triggers. They have a lot of give. You have to crank them every single time to get any kind of awareness. You can tap them easy enough if you need to do that. It just makes sense to me that that's how, you know, in a video game you're going to be firing, or you're going to be letting loose with a grenade, or those kinds of things. It just makes sense. And I think ergonomically speaking, it just kind of does it all, right? It's much more ergonomic than an SNES controller, but you can see, you know, the SNES controller kind of starts, with the idea of the kind of, you know, dropping out, making this area bigger, right? These two areas kind of bigger, and then it kind of drops out. 360 controller takes that to the next level. Yeah, I know they need to hide the motors inside of it and whatever, but I just think it does that perfectly. And we all know the weakness, right? The weakness of the D-pad. But I think that's the whole part of the 360 controller, is that the D-pad is pretty worthless, so why even put it on there? I think they could have gone without that D-pad, and I'd have been perfectly fine with it. So they didn't leave behind the old controllers and the D-pad world that we lived in completely. They just threw it out mostly. Cool. Youngblood drew attention to the fact that if you have smaller hands, then you're probably going to prefer this controller right here, which is an original DualShock controller for the PS1, which is what I have in front of me now. Now, as you can see, even just probably a little bit right off the bat, one of the analog sticks that you know I use the most kind of hangs off now. It doesn't completely center up. You can shake it and kind of see it move around a little bit. But let's talk about this thing a little bit. I think people with smaller hands probably do find this controller a lot easier to use. Like my hands are completely around this controller right now. And if you compare that to a 360 controller right now, where I can't grab a hold of that thing at all in the same way. It's kind of wider, it's kind of more spaced out. The DualShock was always my favorite back in the day. I thought it was a great implementation. I like that there are bumpers. I've never liked that there were two sets of bumpers, though. I thought that was a kind of a design flaw. I'd much prefer the triggers of the 360 there. But I thought that was a cool, you know, an interesting idea. You could do that. You could foreseeably, you know, do like cool things like Metal Gear Solid and things like that, where you could tap both buttons and pull your hands off the controller, which is cool. The D-pad on the DualShock, for my money, is probably the best D-pad, if not the best D-pad ever, outside of the Super Nintendo. The D-pad implementation here is just great. I like having the buttons separated. I like it being part of the same, you know, still the same part of the same D-pad, but it just feels so much better in your hands. You know, it just reacts better. It feels better. And for my money, you could get better, more accurate button presses from this D-pad on the DualShock controller than you could out of any other D-pad ever made. It just does everything right in that regard. But look again, right? We're in the exact same place we were before with the Super Nintendo button implementation. Hasn't changed, won't change. The grouping's a little bit different, obviously, because Super Nintendo circled them horizontally. But the you know, square, circle, triangle, X configuration is still around today, will be around forever. And I think that's a cool way to do it. You know, there's no Microsoft went A, B, X, Y, the same way that that Super Nintendo did. Anyway, and of course, you know, it's got the place for the rumble motors and things like that. The analog sticks on the original DualShock for sure, but as we got into DualShock 2 and DualShock 3, less so, felt like they just weren't nearly as robust, for my money, as the ones on the Microsoft controller. We all know the problem with the analog stick on the N64. That thing was impossible to work with, and I think that thing would have been great with, you throw a 360 kind of a mechanism on there, and it would just be awesome. Anyway, just my opinion. Dubious Gaming talked about the ergonomics and the build quality of the 360 controller as being one of the reasons why he thinks it's the best. You know, ergonomics are a huge factor. I'll show you in a minute when I get to my nomination, as it were. How the philosophy of things kind of changed. You went from that kind of block for the NES to having more of a kind of parallel thought. Think about the Duke again for the Xbox. Your hands are parallel. They're very far apart because the damn thing is so huge, like a Wii U controller, for example. But your hands are very apart, but they're kind of parallel, right? It's still square. It's just parallel. Slowly, companies kind of decided that your hands didn't need to be parallel. They needed to be kind of intersecting and closer together. That's what I think the DualShock does very well, but really gets done very well on the 360 controller, more than any controller before. You can see my hands are not parallel. They're actually running up against each other right at the top. And so the capability, ergonomically speaking, is so much better. You don't get hand cramps. You don't feel awkward with your wrist. I mean, I'm not saying those things don't happen. They still do. But it just feels so much more comfortable. I think one of the reasons why you don't hear people talk anymore about getting Nintenditis, and there's not all that garbage in the media about how it's ruining our hands and blah, 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 is because ergonomically speaking, things are just so much better now than they ever were before. I think 360 is the first real controller that is ergonomically almost perfect. It just gets the job done in every way possible. You might disagree about where the buttons are arranged and how they should move and where they should be. I think that's valid criticism. I just think in your hands, for my money, it just doesn't seem like there's a much better controller than the 360 controller. It's just totally perfect. Makes total sense. No matter where you put it, it feels good. And let's see. Where does that leave me? Yes, with, what is this? Cisco 83. Why not include PC controls as a part of our conversation? Well, it's a good point. You know, using a keyboard and a mouse is undeniably probably the most utilized, it's up there as the most utilized control mechanism for games in history, right? And I think most people would say, at least people that are pretty hardcore, would say it's still the best. And I think that makes a lot of sense. You get a lot of accuracy with a mouse, especially when you kind of learn that system, you know, of going through, for example, you know, with a traditional mouse system. You know, the capabilities are fairly easy. It fits in your hand really well. It's easy to kind of move around, and you kind of get the right perspective, as it were, you know, with a mouse and keyboard. You feel kind of like you're there. You're using both of your hands in tandem. Even if you're moving with this one, it's less kind of more, you know, blistered thumbs kind of a feel, right? I like that better. For first-person shooter, for my money, there is nothing better than a keyboard and a mouse, but I still buy all my first-person shooters for the controllers. I'm talking about genres, which is what many of you did. I think there's a genre conversation. This gets back to Mr. K's comment. There's a genre conversation here. If we're talking about platformers, for my money, there is nothing in the world better than a controller. Platformers just make sense with controllers. If you're talking to me about RTS, you know, given that nothing really has changed in control mechanisms for a long, long time, you know, voice, touch, you know, controlling kind of in the air with movement, put those aside for a second. RTS makes no sense to me on a controller. It just doesn't work well. You know, obviously we talked about shooters. You know, what else? RPGs. RPGs work really, really well in controllers. RPGs do not seem to me, do not seem to work at all with me with mouse and keyboard. I don't know why, but that just seems to be the way that it is. Racing games. Racing games for me are either a controller-based or they are peripheral-based with a wheel, which I used to have. I remember getting Gran Turismo 2 and a wheel for my PlayStation one Christmas, and I just thought it was the greatest thing ever. One of my ongoing projects is to build an actual racing rig for the Xbox. Maybe I'll make it for the Xbox One now, I don't know. Or for PS4, or for whatever I end up buying, because the jury is still out. The point is, you know, the thought is that I would rather have a driving mechanism for racing games. That being said, whenever I play Mario Kart on the Wii, I always play with the nunchuck alongside the Wiimote. And that's because, for me, that just makes the most sense. I can drive with my little nunchuck, and I can do flips and pull all the buttons with this hand. And it just makes logical sense to me. I like that control. I think it works. Maybe that's because the turning and everything on the Wii U isn't so wonderful, or on the Wii isn't so wonderful. I'd like to see what can happen with the Wii U. So, you guys see what I'm saying. I don't have to go through every single freaking genre. The point is, I think there could be a best controller for every single genre. Maybe that's another good question. And there were several of you that brought up questions that kind of shot off from this conversation. Trust me, I wrote them all down. I have the lists. Whenever you guys nominate any kind of questions for me, I write them down and use them in future ringers. I love asking user-submitted questions as a part of the weekly ringer. Okay. I'm going to talk now about my favorite controller, or one of my favorite controllers. And that is this puppy right here. So this is a Dreamcast controller. And I think this follows along with the conversation. You see the memory pack right here, right? This follows along with several... This is a key evolution in my mind from several things that go on with the history of controllers. First of all, buttons. Same as the Super Nintendo. Always have been, always will be. It makes total sense. They seem a little smaller, a little more candy-like, but, you know, solid, easy to use, simple, right? No select button, just a start button. The D-pad on this is deceptive. It looks kind of difficult to use, and it looks sharp and edgy, but I actually found the D-pad on this to be very responsive. It's very cushy. You can notice I don't know if you can hear that at all, but there's not much to it, right? It's very responsive, it's very quiet, and it takes a ton of force, so I actually like that implementation. But the control of the analog stick, this is the first big evolution that I saw in the Dreamcast that I thought was so well implemented. This thing just gets it. This is the best I've seen outside of a 360, is the analog control on a DC. Now, here's what I was going to talk about. You see here, when I put my hands on this, how my hands are completely parallel. Maybe even bending out a little bit. Maybe bending out and pointed out at the top. That, to me, is kind of an ugly ergonomic situation. You know, it doesn't make a lot of sense. But the controller feels really good in my hands. It's very easy to kind of manipulate all the buttons. Everything is within a push, no problem. The triggers on the Dreamcast are really, really good. And the thing is, they don't have, I don't think, as much give as a 360 controller trigger does, but they have enough that you could really fine-tune this. And I remember playing, you know, games like House of the Dead and things like that with these triggers that just made sense and made it so much more fun. Then I got a light gun, and I never played that anymore. Anyway, the other thing was, you know, the memory stick ports, right? Back when memory stick ports were important, you actually could have a memory stick like this. And several of the memory sticks, you know, this was part of the great idea of Dreamcast, was to have games built into it. So you could actually have a little portable game here where you could play your game and whatnot. And then when you were done playing your game, you just snap it right back in the Dreamcast, and it actually had the screen on the top. So you could actually snap it into the Dreamcast. It would show, you know, what game you were playing. It showed any kind of information that you needed to have right there. In some ways, it's kind of the first incarnation of what we find with the Wii U, in that it put information in here that you could actually have on the controller that coincided with the game. Most of the time, it was just the name of the game, but there were other implementations as well. And the Dreamcast was so wonderfully hackable with Windows CE on it that people started to find other creative things to do with all this stuff. Key weaknesses. You know, I don't really sure what I think about the memory pack stuff. I think that's crazy. But the actual control contact came from the bottom of the controller. Kind of weird. It feels pretty jarring when you get into it. And as you start to move the controller, it isn't that it's uncomfortable. It's just that the wire keeps hitting you wherever you go with it. And I found that to be pretty annoying. So I found that to be a key weakness of the Dreamcast. Other than that, I think it is that same kind of parallel mentality. You know, your hands should be close, but they're parallel to each other. You know, compare that to a 360 again, where everything just kind of, I mean, you can just see the position of my hands are so much easier. I can literally do this, and it holds on completely well, and it's just perfect in that regard. So that leads me to this. I agree with all of you guys. I think there is a different controller that works for all the different situations, and really you could have a best controller for every genre. If I'm going to pick the most influential controller, which is how several of you answered the questions, no doubt about it in my mind, the most influential controller of all time is the Super Nintendo controller. Every single controller since then has utilized elements of the Super Nintendo controller. And if I'm going to go with the best controller of all time, in terms of most complete, it has everything you need, and it has the fewest problems, even though there are still problems with it, I'm going to have to go with the 360 controller. I think it is the best controller of all time. I have yet to hold... I think it's very versatile, right? So if you cover all those bases, this will cover you in almost every situation. You can play FPS with this. You can still comfortably play a platformer, and it's not jarring or weird in any stretch of the imagination. So for me, this is the most complete controller. I haven't held an Xbox One controller yet. I obviously haven't held a PS4 controller yet, but I'm looking forward to holding both of those and kind of seeing. Several of you talked about the idea that a controller went into your thought about purchasing. I think that's great. I mean, I think that makes a ton of sense. I remember when the PS3 was announced, when they had the Batarang controllers, that everybody was kind of like, what the hell is that, right? Here's the one thing I'll say, and I hope that the PS4 and the Xbox One get this thing right. I don't see any reason why the Kinect and the PlayStation Move didn't do this better. Although the PlayStation Move kind of did this, the Kinect didn't do it, and it pissed me off. But the new PS4 controller is going to do it really well, and I have a feeling the Xbox One is going to do it as well. You couldn't just take a stock controller, sit in front of the screen, and use both this mechanism to control the game and the camera mechanism to control the game. And that was always frustrating to me. So why is it that the Kinect can't sense that I have a controller in my hand and I'm still going to use the controller, right? So whereas perhaps I could just hold this thing right in front of me using the D-pad and the trigger up here and even the bumper up here if I wanted to, maybe even the select button if I needed, or the D-pad, right? So I have this hand on it, and why couldn't I use this hand to do something else, right? That always blew my mind. Why not be able to, you know, maybe even point a gun or something like this and move with this and then point the gun with this? That to me makes total sense. I could still fire here, right? Or even, you know, have some kind of mechanism here. I don't know. But my point is, I mean, obviously PlayStation Move does that, but I don't understand why we couldn't just use a stock controller. You didn't have to buy another controller, blah, blah, blah. Clearly PS4 is doing that. They're going to have Move functionality with the camera right here. So you're going to be able to have the controller in your hand controlling the game. For me, the idea of controller-less is kind of flawed, and that's what Kinect, that was the vision of Kinect. I don't buy that. Controller-less is BS. What I want is the perfect melding of a controller and a control-less world to make those things more fun. That, to me, will be the ideal situation, and what will ideally, I think, replace the Xbox 360 as the best controller of all time. Okay. We talked about a lot of controllers there, and there are a lot of things I obviously didn't show. I was kind of surprised some people mentioned the Atari controller. That thing is not good for anything but nostalgia. I could easily say something for the first, say the same thing for the first joysticks I ever used, which were on my Commodore 64, which were, you could actually had suction cups in the bottom. You could go stick them to the wall and then use the joystick. Particularly helpful when you were like playing, you know, Winter Olympics and you had to like, you know, snow ski through the Alps. Point is, those things were huge, they were difficult to use and kind of unresponsive, and I found them to be very problematic in that regard. The Atari controller was the same way. I think, no doubt, many of you are probably going to have a preference for the DualShock controller or the SNES controller. I think that's completely fine. That makes total sense to me. I think that's completely legitimate placed, you know, to put those controllers at the top of the list. No question about it. I think everybody's entitled to their opinion. My opinion, 360 is the best of all time. I can't wait to see what the next generation of controllers is going to look like, however. All right, now we've got to move on to the discussion for next time, which I think you guys are really going to have a good time answering. And I think it's a pretty thought-provoking kind of question that will, at least last time I asked about something similar. We had a huge, huge uptick in comments, so I'm looking forward to this. Looking forward to some female commenters on this one as well, as I think this is an I'm really interested to see how you guys are going to answer this question, although it is not gender determinant, which is ironic considering the question. So a long time ago, I read, it wasn't a long, long time ago, but it was probably, you know, more than 6 months ago. I remember reading an article, it was an interview with Notch, who created Minecraft, and they asked him, why is the main character in Minecraft always a man? And why couldn't the main character be a woman? Maybe you could actually just select, you know, as you're going to the game, could you just select male or female and then be that, you know, character throughout that game? And Notch got in a little bit of hot water because he said, no, the lead character of Minecraft is always a man. It's always a male, right? And I remember him being kind of in hot water about that. He said, that's not going to change. It doesn't mean you can't skin it as a woman. Many of you that play Minecraft skin, you know, the main character as a female. But it got me thinking about characters in video games, which led me to a question that I want to ask you guys for next week, which goes like this. Is it important to occupy a specific gender in video games? As in, is it important that you as a player occupy in your mind a specific gendered character while you're playing? Think about that. Think about the myriad games that you've played over time and the characters and what they are and what they represent. Maybe sit down with one of your favorite games and play them and see how you're thinking about the world that you're playing in. I think there are some really cool games that could shed some light on this conversation, but I'm going to leave that to you. So, for next time, answer the doozy of a question of whether it's important or not to identify as and occupy as a specific gender within video game worlds. That is the question for the next Weekly Ringer. Folks, thanks for watching as always. I appreciate all the comments. I appreciate the viewership. Thanks for bearing with me during those times when I'm not as responsive as I want to be, because if in a perfect world, I would love for this video series to be every single week, all the time. But unfortunately, that's not the way that it works. That's okay. As I said before, we're coming up on the 100th episode. That means I need your help. Please make suggestions. If you have suggestions for questions that you'd like to see in the 100th episode, or if you'd like to see me do anything in particular, or you'd like to see any kind of theme in particular, or whatever the case might be, all you have to do is send me a question. You can send it to me at Commodore128@clanofthegreywolf.com. Or you can always shoot me a line on Twitter, follow me at It's the Commodore, all one word. Or you can just send me a message, a private message, over the website if you are a registered user of the website as well. So, send those things on. Give me any contributions that you might have for the Weekly Ringer, things you think might be able to make the show better, things that you would like to see as a part of the show, whatever the case might be. You got suggestions of any kind, I am all ears. I've only been doing this for 100 episodes in 2.5 years, folks. So, you know, there's definitely room for improvement. Anyway, thank you, as always, for watching The Weekly Ringer here on ClanOfTheGreyWolf.com. I am the Commodore, and there is no reset button.